From the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Jennifer Pemberton with this local and statewide news. The Alaska House has a new speaker and can officially begin its work. Representative Bryce Edgman of Dillingham will again be the speaker. He held the title for the last 2 years. This ends a 31-day stalemate that blocked the House's work. Two Anchorage Republicans, Chuck Kopp and Jennifer Johnston, decided to break the month-long tie and vote for Edgman, who up until recently was a Democrat. He changed his party affiliation earlier this week to undeclared. Johnston says the path to the vote was a long, hard journey.
And I want to quote the late Ted Stevens. And I'm going to say, to hell with politics. I'm just going to do what's right for Alaska. And what's right for Alaska is that we get this house in order.
She says she supports having a budget that won't take unplanned draws from any of the state's savings accounts. Edgman says the past month has been trying, but he says a lot was accomplished by House members talking across partisan lines.
I think we could pick up where we left off and make up for lost time and really focus on what truly is the responsibility in front of us, which is a fiscally sustainable budget. And a budget that Alaskans not only would be proud of, but a budget that also accommodates all of the needs and essential services that are important to our constituencies individually, but to the state as a whole.
All but five Republican representatives voted against Edgman. Wasilla Representative David Eastman voted no. He said most Alaskans wanted a Republican speaker.
I can't help but conclude that those back home would feel as though we were not listening to what they have asked for, were we to continue to maintain the leadership of the last 2 years.
All 15 Democrats, as well as four Republicans and Ketchikan Independent Dan Ortiz, voted for Edgman. Kenai Republican Gary Knopp was absent for the vote. The House voted narrowly to excuse his absence. Knopp's decision to leave the Republican caucus in December led to the deadlock. He said he made the decision because the caucus wouldn't have been able to function. It's not clear which members will agree to serve in the majority, which Edgman said is open to all members of the House. House committees could be organized as soon as Friday. Governor Mike Dunleavy proposed budget cuts on Wednesday that could completely remake Alaska government and its education, healthcare, and transportation systems. But Dunleavy's power to reduce Alaska's budget only goes so far. Nat Herz with Alaska's Energy Desk reports on some of the legal and political obstacles that stand between the governor and his goal of a balanced budget.
You might think it's pretty straightforward for Alaska's chief executive to cut the state budget, but turns out it's not. Alaska state government is a complex thicket of programs and services, each with its own set of constituencies. The legislature also has its own budgeting powers, and some of the programs offered by the state require changes to laws or regulations before they can be cut back. Take Medicaid, for example. Dunleavy is proposing to cut more than $750 million, or 33%, from the state federal health care program. But he hasn't said specifically how he's going to do that, like whether he wants to pay lower rates to healthcare providers, for example, or cut off access to care for certain groups of Alaskans. Becky Hultberg runs an industry group that represents hospitals and nursing homes.
Some things will require statute change, but not everything. Like healthcare in general, Medicaid is complex, and his ability to enact these changes will really depend on what the cuts are. And we don't know what the cuts are.
Depending on what exactly Dunleavy proposes, his plan could require federal regulators to approve it. Or the state legislature might need to change Medicaid laws. And there's no guarantee that the Trump administration or the legislature will sign off. Meanwhile, Dunleavy is also proposing to close a huge chunk of Alaska's $1.6 billion budget gap by boosting state tax revenue. The state would take the revenue, about $400 million worth, away from cities and boroughs that already collect it from property taxes that they levy on oil and gas infrastructure. But before Dunleavy can take that step, lawmakers would have to pass a bill to eliminate the cities and boroughs' taxing powers. Each of those municipalities has a state representative and a senator representing them, and the one that would be most affected, the North Slope Borough, has four lobbyists in Juneau. Nils Andreasen leads a coalition of municipalities.
You're talking about some of the wealthiest and greatest contributors to economic development in the state. My sense is that they'll have a very big impact on how this is able to move forward or not.
Programs that aren't backstopped by specific laws or federal requirements, however, can be more easily reduced. One of those is public broadcasting. Dunleavy is proposing to completely eliminate the $2.5 million that the state sets aside for radio and TV. Advocates for programs like that are already strategizing about how they can rally state lawmakers to their defense. But veteran observers of the budget process are looking forward to Dunleavy's trump card over the legislature, his authority to line-item veto money from individual programs. That veto power is balanced by lawmakers' own ability to override Dunleavy's veto. But doing that requires a 3/4 supermajority vote. Greg Erickson is an economist who used to publish a weekly Alaska budget newsletter, and he says that 3/4 vote is a hard bar to clear.
The constitutional structure in Alaska gives the governor unprecedented power as far as other states are concerned. That's going to be difficult to ensure for certain that you have the 3/4 votes necessary to push the money, the appropriations out over the governor's veto objections.
Erickson says he expects Dunleavy to use his veto power to make good on his budget-cutting objectives. And he suggests that anyone who opposes them should be looking to their legislators for support. In Anchorage, I'm Nat Herz.
That proposed budget for the Department of Corrections cuts $19 million from this year's budget. Nearly $13 million of the estimated savings will come from a plan to send 500 inmates to private prisons outside of Alaska. The financial cost for housing people outside of the state is about $95 per day compared to $170 per day in Alaska. Sylvan Robb is the Department of Corrections Administrative Services Director.
The department felt confident that we could find space outside for 500 inmates and that we could find that number of inmates within the system who would be appropriate to be transferred outside.
She says if this budget is passed, the department would need to put out a request for proposals to find prison vendors who could house people. The Department of Corrections would send out individuals who had already been sentenced and had significant amount of time to serve in order to reduce transportation costs. Some who have spent time in private prisons out of state say officials need to consider more than just finances. Carl Vandenherk spent about 6 years in prisons in Arizona in the late 90s and mid-2000s.
You know, you start learning new criminal ways out there. You start, you know, it's kind of lawless. The staff members don't get paid enough. You know, they're pretty much minimum wage, so, you know, they're easy to talk into bringing the dope sack.
He says the loneliness of being far from family and the easy access to drugs had a very negative effect on him and others. They learned different money-making schemes and how to manipulate corrections officers from prisons in other states.
To put us all out of state was not smart. We came back seasoned criminals. We all came back heroin junkies. We all came back with hepatitis.
Now Vandenherk is part of a Christian-based treatment program at the Anchorage Correctional Complex. And finally, the governor's budget proposal lops $134 million from state support for the University of Alaska, a cut UA President Jim Johnson says would require drastic actions.
To close campuses, to close programs. We have to do less with less. We've heard that statement coming out of Juneau recently. That's what we're going to have to do in a pretty dramatic way.
President Johnson provided some perspective on the magnitude of the proposed reduction.
All of UAA is $120 million. So closing the entire UA campus does not meet this cut.
He also offered another illustrative option.
If we doubled our tuition, we would just cover this cut.
Johnson emphasizes that everything is on the table as UA administrators and regents begin discussing how to absorb such a large reduction, but noted it starts with more narrowly defining the university's mission. Johnson says crafting a leaner budget will be the primary subject of weekly meetings with UH system chancellors as well as a February 28th Board of Regents meeting.